Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. From startups to established companies, and it's fair to say everything in between, I'll be bringing you a variety of guests from Southampton's incredible business community. And I'm pretty excited because today I'm in the studio with none other than Paul Hill, owner of Paul Hill Change, formerly Everyday Hypnotherapy. And he is here to share his incredible story, but also he's going to be sharing some top tips on what you can do to help improve your mental fitness. What is mental fitness? Well, let's find out. Paul, welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much for having me, Matt.
You are most welcome indeed. It's brilliant to get you in the studio on this brilliant day, and I'm really looking forward to unpacking the show. We're going to be touching on things like mental fitness, mental health first aid, a lot of the things you do around sort of, you know, helping people with different coping strategies, overcoming challenges Yep. that they might be facing. Is that fair to say?
It is indeed.
And what a journey you've been on. So should we kick off?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, take us back. Yeah, take us back to where it all began.
So, gosh, taking back to where it began. I've always been interested in psychology and the way the brain works. So I was a mortgage broker for about 25 years, had various challenges, went through a couple of divorces, etc. And I got to a very dark stage in my life, to the point where I had a suicide attempt. It was one of those moments where you wire the car for sound with Gorilla tape and hose pipes. And it didn't work. And the reason it didn't work was because the car that I chose to do it had a catalytic converter. Who knew?
Yeah.
Someone was looking over me that day. And it was a particularly bad, bad place. People say that when you're at that sort of low, the depths of depression, if you're contemplating suicide, you're really being selfish. Well, it's really quite weird because as human beings, our go-to is survival. Mm. We are great survivalists.
Hardwired, yeah.
It's hardwired into us. So if your mental state has overwritten the hardwire, you're not in your right mind. Mm. So therefore, it cannot be a selfish act. Make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So I managed to find help. And the help I found was with friends, family, hypnotherapy and NLP.
And by your own admission, I know when we were talking a couple of weeks ago, you said you weren't very good at asking for help.
Absolutely not.
So that was a bit of a milestone and a bit of an achievement for yourself.
Absolutely. I was one of those people that people came to for advice, whether it be on my expertise in the mortgage market or just being me. People would always be knocking on my door for advice. Mm. I remember I used to do quite a bit of yoga, and I sent a letter to my yoga teacher trying to explain my thoughts. Mm. But the nature of me is to always be quite humorous about things, so I put in a lot of humor into the letter. The reply I got back was, "Oh my God, Paul, how we laughed." Because the message I was trying to get across hadn't been received as I'd wanted it to, but then that was my fault because I hadn't put it in terms of I need help.
Yeah.
And that's dogged me, if you like, all the time, just being the laughy jokey. Sometimes you just need to say, "Guys, I'm at an all-time low. I really, really need help."
Yep.
And if you ask, it will always come to you. Not necessarily by the sources you originally asked it from, but it will come to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you left the mortgage
Yeah, I left the mortgage
behind.
Yeah, and studied. Was going to do a university degree. Found a hypnotherapy course. Went on the course. Thought, oh my God, this is something I can actually do. What started it was I had hypnotherapy with someone. I'm not going to say who it was, but I sat there thinking, God, I can do better than that.
Oh, yeah.
It was really arrogant thought, but that's what led me to do the hypnotherapy course. Then the person that taught me said, don't just rely on hypnotherapy. Go into NLP, did NLP, go into EMDR. And I've got a whole load of tools in my toolbox now that I mix and match for each individual client.
And for anybody that doesn't know what NLP stands for?
Neuro-linguistic programming.
Okay.
And EMDR is eye movement decentralization rationale.
Oh, wow. And in a nutshell, like, how would you even describe that?
So, like, if you and I are talking now, okay, so I want you, the listeners can't see this, but I want you to make direct eye contact with me now. And for those of you listening, Matt is doing that. Now, don't take your eyes off of me. Tell me exactly, in detail, about your most recent holiday. You looked away. So, what happens is we access our memories with our eyes. Okay?
Yes.
And we access our emotions with our eyes. You've just done it now. You look down. I'm talking. So when we access those emotions and you are particularly accessing a traumatic emotion up here, I will have a pen or something edging your eyes away from that and talking to you in positive ways so that you can't access the memory.
Right.
That's the basis of EMDR.
Crikey. There's a bit of science behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And you did a bit of mental health first aid as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did mental health first aid. It was with a lovely guy called Peter Larkham. He's a very, very experienced mental health first aid trainer. And I wanted to do it because, like with most things, certain people like to see a whole load of qualifications. And initially, the mental health first aid certificate, I thought that will get me into the business world. Mm. But once I started doing it, it actually enhanced everything I was doing with my private clients.
Yeah.
And for instance, like talking about suicide, most people think, gosh, if someone's being suicidal, the last thing you want to do is mention the word suicide. Well, it's entirely different. 180%, you want to be able to talk about it so they feel comfortable to be able to talk about it. And it led me down a whole other different things that I needed to learn to give the best possible service for my clients.
Yeah, absolutely. So how long have you had your own business for?
15 years. Yeah, 14, 15 years now.
So you, you went through a, you know, really challenging time, and then you sort of learnt the hypnotherapy side of it.
Yep.
But you don't just do hypnotherapy, do you?
No. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've called it Paul Hill Change. It's always been everyday hypnotherapy. But I feel that if you just mention hypnotherapy, it turns 50% of the population off.
Because we've got these preconceived ideas of you're going to get a coin out or you're...
Yeah, okay. If I had a pound for every person that said to me, are you going to make me hop on one leg or bark like a dog?
Mm.
Or the other one, what was it, Little Britain? Don't look around the eyes, look into the eyes. I'd be worth a fortune.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not just about hypnotherapy, but hypnotherapy does work. Next question people say is, oh, I can't be hypnotized because I'm too intelligent or I'm too this or everybody... is susceptible to hypnotherapy.
Wow. Not that we're going to do any live right now.
Well, the thing is, you think you're in a studio, don't you, right now?
God, could you imagine taking me to some crazy place? You mentioned as well, Paul, that you you help people that might have suffered some trauma.
Yeah. So EMDR is particularly good for trauma sufferers because the trauma itself is just an event. Okay? It's the emotion that you attach to the event that gives it credence.
Mm.
If you, on the way here, for instance, if I was driving here and came to the traffic lights on Jury's Corner or whatever it's called, and somebody rear-ended me, and I got out and went, and started using expletives and shouting and screaming. There's no damage to my car because it wasn't a big bang.
Mm.
And then I noticed that they've got a child seat, so I might remonstrate with them about being a poor parent. I get in my car, straight on Facebook, saying what rubbish drivers there are in Southampton. Meet up with you, say, I can't believe what's just happened to me. Or I come to that same corner, someone rear-ends me, I get out with a smile, look, there's no damage. Are you okay? Yeah, we've all made these mistakes, blah, 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 blah. The event was exactly the same. It's the emotion that I attached to it that changed its validity.
Yeah, sure.
Not the event itself.
Yeah, sure. It's fascinating, this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Can we talk about the state of kind of mental health? Because obviously it's in the news almost every day and it's something that affects pretty much all of us.
Yeah.
What are you seeing at the moment?
Okay, so I like to think of it in terms of mental fitness rather than mental health.
I'm glad you said that.
The thing is, when we mention mental health, people automatically assume poor mental health. Nobody thinks about good or great mental health. Don't blame yourself if you think that way. We've got a natural negativity bias. That's the way we're built.
Goes back to that hardwired, hard-coded. Yeah. Yep.
Any of the listeners, male or female, doesn't make any difference. You're out with a group of your friends for a coffee and you decide you need to take a comfort break. So there's three or four of you, you go for a comfort break. You come back from the comfort break within 10 feet of the table that you're sat at with your friends. They're chatting away. You get to within 10 feet. They stop talking. What do you think?
They're talking about you.
Yeah. In good terms?
Generally, I'd probably say no.
No.
Yeah.
The fact that they might be arranging your surprise birthday party never crossed your mind.
Why is this, Bill?
It's our natural negativity bias. It's been honed for 3.2 million years, depending on your beliefs, 3.2 million years of evolution. We are designed to think towards the negative because guess what? It's kept us safe. We're still here. People that were born 3.2 million years ago and had that... yippee-ki-yay.
They didn't last very long. Okay.
The people that lasted are the ones who were worried every single day of their lives.
Mm.
The mental health pandemic we've got now is that we don't attribute that fight and flight to getting eaten by a pterodactyl or whatever it happens to be. We attribute it to the email, the Facebook, the road rage. And we don't deal with our adrenaline as well as we should or could.
Yeah.
So we're on this constant high.
And it, obviously the smartphones as well, the dopamine, the serotonin.
It just, we've got more drugs, we've got better drugs in our bodies, ones you've mentioned, dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, that are stronger than heroin, all these other drugs. And if we just spent time encouraging the growth. So for instance, oxytocin, we call it the love drug or the hug drug. Okay. If you and I were to have a hug, like a man hug, it's not going to release oxytocin. Mm. Oxytocin takes about 20 seconds of hugging. That's why for you and I to have that hug, you know, you count 1, 2, 3, getting a bit weird now, Matt.
We'll do that in a break.
But it's cool because it get that oxytocin, then you get the dopamine shot. And it's like, oh my God, I feel so great today.
Yeah.
Well, there are things you can do. There are exercises you can do. There are foods that you can eat. All sorts of things to bring your own amazing body chemistry to work for you.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? It's almost like a whole lifestyle thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to spoil anything, but obviously we're going to take a short break in just a mo. But in part two, you're going to be sharing, you've brought in some top tips on what people can do to maybe improve their mental fitness. Is that right?
Mental fitness.
And I also want to talk about the conversation we had about the subconscious mind as well. Mm. And about almost sort of being conscious with that and understanding kind of how that works, because that can really affect what you think and how you think.
Absolutely.
So, Paul, this has been absolutely brilliant. This is just a teaser, really, for what's to come. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this.
Voice FM.
You name it, we'll collect it.
So a bed?
Yep.
A sofa?
Yep.
All right, what about a shed?
Yes.
So anything?
Everything non-hazardous.
Hi there, I'm Steve.
And I'm Woody.
And we're the co-founders of Ethiclear.
We collect waste and clear houses.
And we do it ethically.
Because if your waste is good enough to be used again,
we'll make sure it is.
As Ethiclear has a network of like-minded people around Southampton.
So for anything
of almost any size
that you can't shift,
book your clearance at ethiclear.co.uk.
So I got a home office in the garden, and in the spring and the autumn it's perfect. But in the middle of winter and summer, it's not fun. The heater costs a fortune when it's cold outside, and in the summer, opening the windows just isn't enough. Which is why I got Just Coolers to install a small air conditioning unit. It keeps me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. It's the most cost-effective way of doing it. And with a 5-year guarantee and prices from $799, what's not to like? For your free quote, just visit just-coolers.com and keep your home office just right.
Voice FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. And I'm in the studio with the incredible Paul Hill from Paul Hill Change, formerly Everyday Hypnotherapy. Paul, how are we doing?
We're doing really well. Now, I like the word incredible. I like that.
You're welcome. You've NLP'd me in some crazy way. So Paul is here. He's a mental fitness expert, to be honest, among many other things. And Paul's here to, a bit later in the show, he's going to be sharing some of his top tips on what you can do to improve your mental fitness. But Paul, before we delve into that, I just wanted to touch on or follow on from what we were just talking about, which was this kind of negative bias, which is kind of hardwired into us. We're always looking at the negative rather than the positive. And you gave me this great analogy about the subconscious mind and how that is really pivotal to our mental fitness.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk to us about the subconscious mind and how it works?
Yeah. So the analogy we use was, imagine I've got a sheet of paper, an A4 sheet of paper is white, and I'm going to cut it in half.
Yep.
And I'm going to call that sheet of paper a field. It's a representation of a field. And on the left-hand side of the piece of paper, I'm going to plant corn and wheat. And on the right-hand side of the piece of paper, I'm going to plant deadly nightshade. In 6 months' time, I'm going to come to a field full of crops. You see, the field doesn't care what you put on it. Its only purpose is to grow the seed. The subconscious mind doesn't care what you feed it. Mm. Its only purpose is to grow those thoughts. So if you put in thoughts like wheat and corn, of love, of hope, of the future, of joy, of resilience, it will grow those. If you put in despair and hatred and anger, it will grow those. But here's the key. because of our natural negativity bias, it grows those quicker and the roots go deeper. Because we always, if you drive along on a motorway and there's an accident, the cars will slow down. Nobody's thinking about helping. They're thinking, oh, let's have a look. What's going on? Mm. They're looking for the negative side. Oh, what's going on? That's the way we're built. What I do to help people with the therapies is put weed killer on one side and fertilizer on the other and help you train yourself to lock on to the positive thoughts and the positive language. And that brings me on to language. Matt, language is really, really important.
Yeah, talk us through it. Like, how? Where do you even start?
It's really easy. So everybody listening to this now, and even you, since we've been speaking, I've been talking, you've been listening, and you've been questioning in your mind. Well, it's not you, it's your subconscious questioning the statements. Yeah, I like that one. Oh, I'm not so sure if I like that. I'm going to have to do a little bit of research into what he's just said. That's your subconscious mind working to make sure you're feeling safe in the company of this particular show.
It's almost like, is it like the autopilot?
Yeah.
It's the operating system of the human body.
It is the operating system, and it's there to keep you safe. Unfortunately, a lot of the things that the subconscious mind puts in there to keep you safe are learned from a long time ago. Mm. And they're not necessarily relevant to the person you are today. So your thoughts determine your emotions determine your actions get your results. So what do I do about these thoughts? Go back to your programming. Mm. Go back to your programming, reboot the programming, which will change the thoughts, change the emotions, change the actions, get different results.
And it's interesting because there's probably people out there saying, oh, Paul, I understand that. I get the whole field analogy and it makes complete sense, but I keep having these negative thoughts or the demons of self-doubt keep creeping in. What can people do?
Change language. Change language. Get rid of things like bad. It's good and not so good. Mm. We call it catastrophizing.
Oh, that's a good word.
Well, you take, for instance, the thing that we've been through recently with the pandemic, okay? And Boris Johnson would stand up there and he would say, right, we need to put you in a period of safety, safekeeping. And I'm thinking, great, this is really good. This is what we need to, safekeeping. We need safekeeping. So now we're going to enforce lockdown. Mm. And I'd be screaming at the radio saying, why didn't you just call it safekeeping? Safekeeping was never going to work because it doesn't instill fear. Try saying lockdown with a smile.
Yeah, you just can't do it.
You can't. You can force it, but you can't do it. Try saying catastrophe, murder, hate, anger with a smile. Anger with a smile just doesn't work. Mm. So words have power. They really do. You know, the pen is mightier than the sword. Mm. Okay, words have power. So the words that we use for our colleagues, the words that we use for our loved ones, hugely important. The words that we use for ourselves make a massive difference to how we perceive the world and, more importantly, how we are perceived.
Yeah, that's it. And do you find, you know, when people come to you looking for help, is this generally, this is almost like phase one?
Oh, it's room 101. Mm. We don't have time for the word bad. I don't have time for the word try. You know, if you're going to do. You know, I'm with Yoda. You know, do or don't do. There's no such thing as try.
Yeah, because you were saying it's almost like using the word try, you're sort of kind of setting yourself up for failure, or the option of, well, I did try. Well, did you?
Yeah, absolutely. You are setting yourself up for a fail. Yes, I'm going to do that. There might be a reason why it didn't transpire, and that's a reason. That's not trying. I went, this is what I want to do. The reason I couldn't do it was because of this.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, I'm going to go this way and not go that way. Yeah. I'm not going to try it differently. I'm going to go this way and not that way.
Yeah.
Change the language. If you went home today and, well, let's talk about yesterday. I hate, because this is like prophecy. If you went home today, yesterday, and you went into your living room and somebody had broken into your home, they hadn't stolen anything, but with a tin and aerosol had put, Matt's an idiot. Matt can't run a radio show. He's useless on his bike. He's useless. This, all these things on the walls. What's the first thing that you would do with that room?
Well, you'd want to paint over it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would redecorate it, wouldn't you? So why do we allow people to do exactly the same and not redecorate the inside of our heads?
Oh, yeah.
Take some redecorating. Get in there. Mentally make the image of you seeing that room with all of these slurs that people have said about you, whether they be now, 20 years ago. Close your eyes, mental image. You can see all those words in your head. Go in there and spray paint it lovely, pristine white. Mm. And go, this is it. This is it. I'm drawing a line in the sand. Those things have no control over me anymore. I know who I am. I'm a great guy.
Something,
why not?
Yeah, something so simple, so effective.
Absolutely.
I mean, it might just, did you find as well, you might have to repeat that a couple of times.
Oh, the subconscious mind. So here's the thing. The conscious mind learns from curiosity. The subconscious mind learns from repetition. The conscious mind. So, like, for instance, we're in a radio studio. You didn't know how to push all these buttons and gizmos at all before you came in, yes?
No, and it took me a fair...
But now, I'm going to say that if you close your eyes, you could possibly run it, not perfectly, but run it. You know where the things are.
Yeah.
You would know where to position the microphone, all those things, because you've done it repetitively. But when you need to learn something new, so if they brought in a piece of kit here that was new to you, you'd spend time going through the manual, learn it. And once you learnt it, you'd never look at that manual again because you know it. The subconscious mind learns from repetition. And it learns really well from repetition. So if you tell yourself, I can do this, I'm good enough, I'm right on for this, it'll learn and it'll give you ideas to make that happen.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think people that are perhaps used to having routines probably find that a bit easier. But somebody like me, you know, I'm not necessarily very good at routines. So that I'm almost have to acknowledge those, the habits, acknowledge the things I'm not so good at, and really consciously work on that. Do you find people put post-its on the fridge or write things on the mirror?
Yeah.
So when they wake up in the morning, it's there.
Yeah. But here's the thing. It's not routines that we don't like. So I'll ask you a question. What do you have for breakfast normally?
It's different every day.
Different every day by choice?
No, I don't know. Sometimes it's kind of whatever's there, but...
Yeah. Okay, would that be a routine because it's different every day?
Well, I suppose so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not routines that people dislike.
No.
It's routines that are foisted upon them.
Okay.
So we all have our little idiosyncrasies, the things that we do, because we've chosen them.
Yeah.
But we don't consider them to be a routine. But most people get up at the same time. They'll do the same thing, like they'll go to the toilet first, then they'll clean their teeth, or they'll do this, or they'll do that. But if somebody said, look, we haven't got time for that, you need to do it this way. It's somebody else's routine that we don't like.
Got you. Yeah. And maybe is there a bit of fear of change? Does that
absolutely
crop up?
Absolutely. We are creatures of habit by nature. If you go to a meeting, like this radio station might have a meeting of all of the presenters every month, and you choose to have a boardroom and you hire juries in, okay, and there's 12 seats. Guarantee you, every meeting you go to, you sit in the same seat.
Yeah.
It's not like you've booked it, but that's your... And if anybody else was sat in that seat, you go, hang on a minute, that's my seat.
It's like, you know when you go on holiday and you find the sun lounger?
Absolutely.
And every day.
That's your sun lounger.
That's your sun lounger. Yeah. You've claimed it.
Yeah, we're creatures of habit.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you find these sort of analogies? Because you're very good at sort of converting things, in not necessarily to layman's terms all the time, but putting it in a way that, you know, we can kind of understand and relate to it.
People think in pictures.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We don't think in words, we think in pictures. So if you can put it into a pictorial form, it's more easy to digest.
Yeah. It's brilliant. You love what you do, don't you, Paul?
Absolutely. Love every minute of it.
Could you see yourself doing anything else?
Never. Never. If I've often said to my wife, if we won the lottery, which will enable me not to do anything, you know, I'm 61 next month, I don't need a lot of money to keep me until, you know, that day, I'd still do what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Which shows, I think, you've got a real passion for it.
Yeah.
You are a master of your trade, but... Just, I mean, not looking for an exact figure, but how many people have you helped in your career so far to date? It must be in hundreds, maybe thousands, is it?
Probably, I would say, at least 1,000 people so far. And the age range, the youngest person I've ever worked with was 6 years and 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
And the oldest person I've ever worked with was 94.
Oh, wow. That's a real range.
It's a real range. Most of the time, it's either trauma or low self-esteem. And there's a big difference between low self-esteem and confidence.
Yeah, sure.
You can have low self-confidence and fairly good self-esteem, or the other way around. They're linked, but they are different because self-esteem is how you see yourself. Confidence is what you portray.
Okay, I'm with you. Well, on that note, you've got some top tips, haven't you?
Yeah.
So for anybody out there that might be struggling with low self-esteem or not feeling very confident, or perhaps they got this mega feeling of overwhelm, do you want to share some of your top tips? What have you got in the locker?
Okay, first, sleep. This isn't a therapy thing. This is just proven.
This is just 101.
101, sleep. Sleep is the most important thing. It's what resets your brain. It's what resets your thoughts. It's what resets everything about you. It's not just healing your body whilst you're asleep. It's everything. It's a complete reset. And it's what allows your brain to work on problems. You know when people say to you, just sleep on it overnight.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the reason, because it allows your subconscious mind to do what it's good for, to actually look after you. And the reason you sleep on it is because invariably, when you wake up the next morning, the solution will have come to you in one way or another.
Do you know what, Paul? You just hearing you say that is just a light bulb, isn't it? Moment going on.
Yeah.
Where you think, God, yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, sleep. Sleep's the most important thing.
And for anyone out there that's like, well, I can't get to sleep. I'm struggling to get to sleep. Don't necessarily just accept that, because there are things you can do, aren't there, to help your body naturally get into that kind of sleep cycle.
Yep. Food sources. It's very difficult to go into it because obviously everybody's journey is different, especially when you're talking about foods.
Sure.
But, you know, having a nice warm drink at night, last thing you go to bed, or a milky drink. Mm. Now, some people think that if you drink milk at night, it affects the mucous membranes, and especially men, you might snore. But if you have a nice milky drink, you know, when you have a baby, they say bath, bottle, bed. Yeah? The bath is to relax you. The bottle, fill the belly. Because when you fill the belly, what happens is the blood comes to help digest the food. Mm. When it's helping digest the food, it's not in the head.
Yeah.
Therefore, you feel tired. It's why when we have a lunch that's big, you want to fall asleep in the afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they call it the... I can't remember what the effect is now. It's just gone completely out of my mind. It'll come back to me in a moment.
It'll come back, isn't it?
So sleep's really important. Good diet food. Getting away from beige food. Just your bacon sandwiches all the time and bread. Mm-hmm. You know, eat colourfully. Some people say that a magnesium supplement is really, really good for you.
Oh, okay.
Especially with regard to sleep.
Yeah.
If you find yourself waking up at night and you're still awake within 10 minutes, get out of bed. Don't stay in bed, because the subconscious mind learning will think it's okay to be awake in bed. Don't. Go somewhere where you feel uncomfortable, like a kitchen table, and it's cold. Stay there for a while. Your subconscious will go, I don't like this. This is really cold. Best get back to somewhere nice and warm. Go to bed and see if that helps.
It's almost like taking back control, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we're all capable of taking back control. If you're one of those people that overthinks, you've got a busy day ahead. Take a piece of paper to bed with you. Write down all the things you've got going for the next day. Everything. Write it down and say to your subconscious mind, literally and figuratively, I've got that covered. I know exactly what I'm going to do tomorrow. I don't need to think about it. Sign it, put it at the bedside and go to sleep. And your subconscious mind, after a while, will go, oh, they've got that covered. I don't need to worry about it.
Mm. That's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Can we just quickly delve into how you provide support for people? Because it's not just sort of face-to-face, is it?
No.
Because you can provide help over Zoom or online.
Yeah, absolutely. It was during COVID, my business, the face-to-face business, went off the edge of a cliff, obviously, because I wasn't allowed to see people. Mm. Although, because I was a mental health first aider, there were people that I could help still. Mm. But yes, it was, what do I do? And then... You know, we talk about words being powerful. There was one particular word that I really didn't like, but I had to embrace it. Pivot. You need to pivot your business. Everybody was saying we need to pivot. So I had to go online. So now I've got people that I help in Canada, Spain, France. Never a thought of doing that before, but now, there you go, it's happened. So I do Zoom calls to help people, group Zoom calls. But I also... go and visit people's houses. Because one of the things I've never understood about my particular industry, the mental fitness industry, is you've got somebody who's suffering from some sort of anxious thoughts. So you expect them to get in their car, to drive to somewhere they've never been before, to meet someone they never met before, to meet me, 18 stone lump, and then for me to take them into my therapy room and go, relax. So I quite often go to people's houses, as long as the problem isn't surrounding actions that have happened within the home.
Yeah, makes sense.
Go there and say, right, you are now in a relaxed environment. Now let's see if we can help.
Well, look, Paul, hold that thought. We need to take a short break.
Oh, dear. Oh,
I know. But we'll be back for part three, where we're going to be delving into some of the challenges that you yourself have faced along the way in your own unique business journey.
Yep.
And perhaps you've got a few more top tips on mental fitness you could share as well.
Yeah, sure.
So don't go away. We'll be right back after this.
Live and local. Voice FM.
Let's hear more from Ian at Station Motors.
I think it's important to have a family business. My customers relate to it. I've been doing cars for people and now I'm doing their son's cars. My daughter works in reception and my son's nearly a fully qualified accountant. He does my bookwork. Both very good drivers. I used to walk to school past his garage. It was a petrol station back then. So I ended up buying the garage off that family, you know. So I like to think I've brought my family into that family business.
Station Motors Woolston, by the Itchen Bridge.
This is the sound of exercise when it's made fun. It's called VisoSport, and it started in Southampton. You meet up, you play fun games, you exercise, you laugh, you keep fit. It's for people of all abilities. Visit visosport.net or search for VisoSport in Meetup and have fun getting fit.
Southampton's Voice FM.
So, I am in the studio with the incredible Paul Hill, who is, among other things, how do we describe you, Paul? How would we describe you? Because mental is, you know, you just help people in so many incredible ways. I'm almost lost for words. In a nutshell, how would you sum up what you do?
Right, in a nutshell. God, it's one of those twee things, isn't it? I help people be better versions of themselves. I help people let go of it. So back in when I first started doing visual networking, mm-hmm. Somebody said to me, "You're like a baggage handler." They'd watched a movie that came out in COVID called The Aeronauts, and it was about hot air ballooning at the turn of the century. And you've got the heroine and the hero, and they're in this hot air balloon flying over the mountains and the storms. They can't go down because they can't see the mountains. They're in fog. The only way to get them safe out into the sunshine was to jettison all the extraneous baggage within the crate that they were in, within what it was called the basket. And once they got rid of it all, they rose out of the clouds into the sunshine. People said, "You're like that, Paul. Mm-hmm. You help us get rid of all the extraneous baggage." So that's why they called me the baggage handler.
I love that. And I love that analogy.
Yeah, it paints a picture, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? Yeah, and you said, you know, people are very pictorial.
Yep.
So we were just talking in the break about practice makes for a better platform.
Yep.
And I just wonder if we can talk about that. Plus your the PMA as well. I want to wrap some of that PMA that we were just talking about.
Okay.
Go for it. Because it's all about the subconscious mind, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a science called neuroplasticity. It's about 20 years old now. And it's about neuro being of the mind and plasticity being malleable. We used to think that at age 7, there was a stopping point. So at the age of 7, you had your principles, your morals, sense of right and wrong, your religious beliefs. Then maybe a little bit later on, 15, 16, there was another set point, and then in his 20s, and then we didn't grow. We now know that's rubbish. We now grow. We have that set point at 7, but we know that we grow throughout our lives, neuroplasticity. And one of the greatest ways to help with neuroplasticity is gratitude. Buddhists have been believing it for years and years and years. So what I say to people is, get yourself a jar, any old jar, every day at a particular time. I want you to write down 5 things that you're grateful for in your life that day. Write them down. Today I'm grateful for this. Today I'm grateful for the wonderful interview I had with Matt Trevis. Today I was grateful for the fact that when I woke up, the first thing I saw was my beautiful wife. Today I was grateful for that I went for my networking. Whatever it happens to be, I'm grateful that I turned the tap on and I got drinking water. I'm in the top 2% of the world's population. Who'd have thought? Write them down. Because when you show gratitude for today, it changes the neural pathways of your brain. And if you change the neural pathways of your brain to continue to think in a better way, then you start to think in a better way. Now, I treat the mind like a muscle. Okay, I've been weight training for years on and off since I was 16, and I've got quite chunky arms. But I know that if I stop using my kettlebells, my muscles will go back to their factory setting. Same way with your brain. If you try these things, if you do a gratitude jar, like I've just explained, if you get your good sleep patterns, if you do exercise, if you eat the right foods, if you talk to yourself in a positive way, all of these things done repetitively and consistently and persistently will change the way you think and give you resilience. But once you've got that resilience, you think you're done. And then you stop. And then you wonder why 6 months down the road, you start having those negative thoughts again. If you're going to do it, it's a lifestyle change. Now, we talked about PMA. So for people that don't know, PMA stands for positive mental attitude. And I've got a positive mental attitude. But if that's all I've got, then at the end of the day, I'm just a happy person. Like, ta-da! But I need to have more meaning to my life. So I say to people, let's change the acronym around. Instead of PMA, positive mental attitude, we're going to call it PAM. And people say, what, positive attitude, mental? I said, no. P is positive mental attitude. That's a given. Then add an action. Do something. If a result of that action, it's good, continue doing it. Momentum. If it's not, stop. Try something else. But if it's good, positive mental attitude with an action if you get a good result, keep doing it. Why would you not? Make sense?
Completely. Completely. Yeah, yeah. It's a complete sort of mindset shift, isn't it?
Yeah.
But like we've said throughout the show, there's so many things that we're sort of hard-coded within. You almost have to take a step back and go, right, okay, just because it's been like that before doesn't mean it has to be like that going forward.
No, it doesn't.
What was the Einstein quote that you...
Oh, God. If you do the same things... If you do the same things today that you did yesterday, don't expect a different result.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're creatures of habit.
Yeah.
There's a great book called The 5 Second Rule by a lady called Mel Robbins.
Oh, I'm going to have to read that.
Okay, it's really good. The basis of it is, if you've got any decision to make in your life, like getting out of bed, for instance, if you let emotion in... Remember, emotion will always trump logic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we went to Southampton Hospital now, outside the main entrance, despite the fact that the whole site is non-smoking, there will be loads of people out there smoking. Some of them, broken limbs or whatever, but some of them will have lung infections, lung diseases. They might even be suffering from all sorts of maladies, but they're still smoking. We know it's bad. And amongst those people might even be some doctors and nurses. Mm. And amongst those doctors and nurses might even be some people that work in the oncology department.
Mm.
Because the feeling they get from the cigarette trumps the logic that they know that it's not good for their health.
Mm.
We do it all the time. So with the 5 second rule, if you've got a decision to make, like you're lying in bed, and if you let that thought, oh, it's nice and snuggly, you're not going to get out of bed. So what you do is you immediately go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get out of bed. Because when you're counting, you're accessing the logical side of your brain, which has nothing to do with emotion. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, do. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, walk past the cookie jar. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, don't have that beer.
Is that something you do yourself?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're blowing my mind. I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing, but I'm definitely going to read the book.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Now, this is interesting because in the break we were talking and I said, Paul, tell me about the business model. And you said it's basically flawed.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us why?
Yeah. So, okay. Personally, my wife and I, we are clients of Asda and Lidl. And we are oftentimes customers of Waitrose and Marks and Spencer's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because there's a difference, isn't there?
There's a difference because we regularly go for our shopping at Asda and Lidl's and we might occasionally buy something from Waitrose and Marks and Spencer. So we're an oftentimes customer.
Mm-hmm.
We're not their ideal person because they want us to go in there every week. People come to see me, and this is going to sound really big-headed and I don't mean it to, but people come to see me with an issue. Generally speaking, 9.9 times out of 10, we solve the issue. They go away. They might come back in a year or two if something else happens, but they don't come and see me because we've dealt with the issue.
Mm.
But I'm not happy with the business model per se, but I'm happy with the fact that I help a lot of people. So I get something out of it emotionally.
But it is interesting though, isn't it? You know, in terms of that sort of, you know, customer attention, and like you say, you're so good at what you do and you help so many people. It must be incredibly rewarding to have that almost high turnover of customer, which for certain industries, they'd be like, oh, we need to do something about this. But for you and what you do,
yep,
it's kind of perfect, isn't it?
It's kind of perfect because I get a lot of people that will send me messages. I'm very fortunate that I get a lot of referrals from my existing clients. But for instance, I had a lady that came to see me because she had a problem with flying. She flies a lot, but she hates it. I mean, when I say hate, let's really work on the word hate. And she goes to concerts and she can't stand being enclosed. This is the message I got yesterday. Afternoon, lovely. I just wanted to send a quick message to say a massive thank you for the help you gave me. All flights to the Maldives were great. No anxiety at all. I even had a sensational time at the Slash gig and I was hemmed in on the row of people. Usually worst nightmare. She said, you are an absolute treasure and I salute you.
I mean, what's not to love?
When you get those things, and I've got loads of them, you cannot help. And I, don't get me wrong, Matt, I have my down days. You know, you're allowed to have your duvet days. You know, my duvet day is diving into a bowl of Haagen-Dazs. Actually, it's probably about 3 or 4 bowls of Haagen-Dazs on a quilt watching rubbish TV. But when I have those days, I know what gets me out. It's reading messages like that from the clients that I've had and thinking, this is why you do what you do.
Yeah. And that's actually quite a nice tip, actually, inadvertently. You know, if there are any business owners out there that are maybe going through a bit of a dark time, or business is really struggling, or they've just sort of lost their mojo a little bit and they've got some great customer reviews to refer back to, maybe that's all they need. Just a little bit of a...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also, there's a guy called Jim Rohn. Sadly, he's dead now. He was an American motivational speaker. He said, You are the average of the five people you spend most time with.
I've heard that, yeah.
Okay? So it's like being on a squash ladder, you know, when you work during a squash club. To improve, do you pay people at the same level of you, or do you play the number one in the club, knowing you're going to get beaten?
Yeah.
Well, you play the number one, because eventually you're going to learn some tricks and trades. You might never, ever beat them, but guess what? You might become number two. And that's the thing. Surround yourself with people that are going to embolden you, people that are going to embrace you, people that are going to listen to you, people that are going to love you for who you are and encourage you, but also people that are going to challenge you.
Yeah.
Because from challenges is where we grow.
That's the growth, isn't it?
That's the growth. We don't. People say in my world, out into your growth mindset, into change, and you need to change, you need to embrace change. But quite often change means pain. You have to step outside of your comfort zone. Well, change the language. Call it your adventure zone instead. Instead of your outside of your comfort zone, call it your adventure zone. I'm on an adventure.
I absolutely love that. That's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant. We're nearly out of time.
Are we?
Yeah.
Gosh.
It's absolutely flying by. But before I let you go out of the studio, I've just got to ask you a few more questions.
Go for it.
So imagine you were sat opposite somebody and they were like, Paul, I've got this great business idea. I've got this thing I want to do. I want to make the leap. I want to go self-employed.
Yep.
But I'm not sure. I'm on the fence. What would you say to that person?
Get good advice. Get good advice. And generally speaking, from free advice, you tend to get what you paid for it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not suggesting that you're going to have to pay for everything, but go to people that know what they're talking about. Join networking groups. Speak to people. Get as much information as you can. Spend a bit of money. There are lots and lots of free... When I say you get from free advice what you pay for it, Barclays Eagle Labs, stuff like that. Vodafone have just started off something. I'm just hearing these things on the radio.
Yeah, sure.
So they are free. You're going to get value. The free advice I'm talking about is going down to the pub and you run the idea by your mate and he says, oh, no, I wouldn't try that because it failed for me. Well, just because it failed for you, mate, doesn't mean to say it's going to fail for me.
Yeah, that's true. GSI, isn't it? Get someone in. Paul, what's next? What's on the horizon? Just ever so quickly. And if there's anybody out there that wants to get in touch because they feel like they need some help,
yep.
What's the best thing for them to do?
The best thing to do, pick up the phone. My least favourite sport, email tennis.
Mm.
You know, pick up the phone. I think because of these phones, we've lost the art of talking. It's texting constantly.
Yeah.
And texting doesn't give the necessarily right message. Pick up the phone and just say, can you help? And I'll tell you if I can help. And here's the important thing. If I don't think I can help you, I'll point you in the right direction as someone who can.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Yep.
How do people find you? LinkedIn or on
LinkedIn? LinkedIn's one of the best things. I've got a website, but don't blame me for it. I did have a Facebook page, but somebody hacked it, so I've got a new Facebook page. It's all in transition from Everyday Hypnotherapy to Paul Who Changed, but LinkedIn's a really good one. There's lots of videos on there at the moment that people can access. The phone number, it's... Anyway, I'll even respond to smoke signals.
I absolutely love that. Paul, look, we're out of time.
Oh.
Do you know what? I've absolutely loved the show. I'd almost have preferred to be a listener, actually. I've just loved talking and just listening to you. What an incredible story. So thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Mate, it's easy to talk when you've got somebody who facilitates it.
Couldn't agree. Well, look, if you've enjoyed that show, I'll be back again next week with another incredible guest. You've been listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. Paul, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Voice FM. Voice FM.
Don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes. And don't put in your recycling bin dirty tins and dirty plastic bottles.
If any of your recycling is dirty, greasy or wet, your whole bin could be rejected. So follow this golden rule. Keep your recycling clean, dry and loose. And remember,
don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes.
This message is supported by Voice FM. And if you want to know more about recycling in Southampton, visit voicefmradio.co.uk/recycling.